Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And we're here wrapping up the month.
This is it. Short month.
We're always wrapping up the month.
Yeah, it seems that way. It's always Monday, always Friday. The rest of the week seems does not count. But it's a short month.
Yeah, very short month.
I feel like I've had a lot of John C. Dvorak in my ears lately.
Why? You've been listening to the No Agenda show or what?
So I drove up to Orlando this weekend. And so in the car, I'm thinking, oh, what am I going to do? Listen to a little music and all that. I'll download the show. So I listened for
a wise choice
and perfect timing. I mean, it takes me 3 hours to get to Orlando. Perfect. You know, from start to finish.
It takes you three. That takes you that long?
Yeah.
Huh.
And then on the way back, I started driving back at about 12:10 in the afternoon on Sunday. I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm like, listen to the guys. So I had 3 more hours. So I've had 6 hours. If you maybe we'll cut it in half, say that, Adam talks a bit too, but I had like 6 hours worth of you over the last few days.
So first of all, what were you going to Orlando for? And was there anybody else in the car?
Just me in the car. I went to visit my son, spend some time. He's over at UCF, his final semester. So I thought I'd go over and have a weekend up there. He works at the Lowe's Hotel for his internship. That's a requirement for his curriculum. And so I got a really great deal on a room, went to Universal, which I have a story about, which I could tell you now. And I had some great dinners, went to a great Korean restaurant, went to downtown Orlando. Just had a really good time. Last few weekends have been quite the drinking and eating extravaganza.
Hmm.
And I'm going on a cruise this weekend. So it's I got to get the elastic pants out, When I was in Orlando, I went to Universal.
Yeah.
So I get the tickets, you get the ticket and you go through the ticket gate, before first you get patted down and you get the metal detectors. I go through the gate. I hand my ticket in. Actually, let me stop. My son goes through first. He puts his ID. He gets free entry into there. So he puts his ID and they said, can you please put your index finger on this fingerprint reader for him? And he's okay. And he goes in. I'm thinking, oh, that's interesting. They do that, I guess, for employees of I don't know. So I go through and I give him my ticket and they said, sir, can you please put your index finger on the fingerprint reader? And I said, no, that is not a chance you're getting my fingerprint. Now, maybe I'm a little weird, but what do they need my fingerprint for? I figured.
They don't. It sounds illegal.
I said, I'm not doing it. Oh, well, so this woman looks at me like, what? We have, 50,000 people that come in here a day and you're not going to give your fingerprint? No, not doing it. I want to be anonymous as much as possible. So, we have to call over the guy, whoever it is, right? So the guy comes over. Okay, yeah, okay. If you show us your ID... And if you sign the back of your ticket, I don't know what the point of signing the back of my ticket was because I get to hold on to the ticket. We'll let you in. So I showed him my ID and I got in. But you could use your fingerprint on for some things like the lockers when you lock things up at the various rides and all. But it's enough already.
Yeah. Sucks.
Yeah, not doing it. Call me paranoid, but I'm not doing it. And of course, I have a little... Just, I guess we'll just get out of the way since we talked about the show. A little bone to pick with you. I sent you that picture. You sent the picture of Adam drunk and you put it into the newsletter and you say, here's the picture. I think it's a fake. That's the first thing. I think it's a fake. And then it's Horowitz's juvenile attempt to get Adam drunk. I'm like, what do I need this for? What do I need this for?
You don't need the aggravation.
I don't.
Okay. Here's the thing. The picture came out of your juvenile attempt, and I'm calling it that.
Okay.
Your juvenile attempt to get Adam drunk, because this is something college kids do. And the fake part is that he had his eyes rolled back, and it was like, I don't know. He didn't look that drunk to me.
That was about three Manhattans in, but it did look like it looked more like he was having a seizure.
Yeah, right? There you go. That's what it looked like. Yeah, it looked like he's having
a
seizure.
I agree with that. I agree with that. But I did just take the picture and it was, I said, oh, that didn't come out so good, Adam. I don't know what that was.
Adam says that it was just a coincidence that the eyes were rolled back, but they were rolled back for some reason.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know what it was. But yeah, like I said, looked like he was having some kind of an episode of some sort. But anyway, it was juvenile, but it was fun. Got to have some fun.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the market. So a quick update of what's going on, because we've had some quite
up and down and up and down and up and down.
I know. Aside from today for a second, let's just go back.
The heat map is almost all red.
Today's red. But go back a few days and it's like, okay, markets are going to recover from this correction and we're going to see a bounce up. And I had said, well, maybe we'll see the next week be down. And it was down until Friday at 2 o'clock when all of a sudden everybody said, oh, I feel like buying. And the Dow Jones ramps by like 200 and something points on Friday for no apparent reason into the weekend, which is also very interesting. And we see about a 700 point total gain on the Dow Jones for over about 2 days, Friday and into Monday. Friday, I don't know what happened there either. I can't tell you why there was this giant surge on Friday or on Monday, either one. So I can say maybe it is this whole, buybacks are coming on. Fear of missing out is there. And the algos are in, and that covers a lot. The algos are a broad brush discussion of computer trading. So we saw also some things that probably helped. The 50-day moving average on the Dow Jones and on the S&P 500 were resistance. And every time we got over it and tried to get over it, the sellers knocked it back down. And then all of a sudden on Friday, we get over it. It holds. And everybody's like, all right, let's go. Let's buy. It's going to stay over. Let's keep it over. Because once it's over, that's a signal for other buyers to step in. So the people that want to get this thing over the top are saying, hey, if we can keep it over this level, there's the potential for other buyers to start coming in.
Right.
So, and then you squeeze out the shorts and all sorts of stuff going on. Of course, we have
all kinds of stuff.
And we have, of course, the whole idea of painting the tape. End of month. Usually it happens a few days before, about 3 or 4 days before, which is right on cue for the end of this month, especially because it's a quick month. So we have that going on. And the idea that, oh, maybe, just maybe, we can get February to end up in the green, which will keep the streak alive at like 15 months in a row or some, I don't remember what the whole, I think it's about 15 months of up for markets. Then we have, and also, maybe there's anticipation of the Powell testimony, which we'll talk about in a second. He testified in front of Congress today. And we had the VIX dropping from 50 to about 16. And it moved up to, I think it closed at 18 today. And the S&P has now recouped about 2/3 of the drop, approximately, which is currently about 4% or so below the all-time high. And just to one more point on all of this, which I go back to the whole buybacks, TrimTabs put out a piece today that said that stock buyback announcements soared to a 3-year high in February of $113 billion. Now that's announcements. But still, that goes into the whole idea that companies are announcing a buyback. Individuals are like, well, if they're going to do buybacks, at least we have a floor underneath the price. And then once they announce it, they start rolling it out.
Yeah. You were tweeting about this.
Yeah. That's what I do. Tweet about this stuff. And by the way, that's over at Andrew Horowitz, one word. And John is at The Real Dvorak over on Twitter for timeless and important information on a regular basis.
Yes. Please add us.
Yep. I mean, John talks about things like The Bachelorette and The Bachelor, I guess.
It was The Bachelor.
The Bachelor.
No, I was listening to this podcast.
Huh?
It's from The Free Beacon, which is a good operation, good news organization. And they've got their podcast. Everyone's got a podcast now, of course. Oh, yeah, of course. Everybody. And this is the third episode. And I listened to it for maybe something I could use, and they end up talking and giggling two of the women were giggling over the Bachelor show and this guy and how he's a hunk. And it was just, I was just like, I was befuddled by the whole thing. And then the guy chimes in and he's a big fan of the show too. And I don't care.
This is a new podcast. How is the quality? How is the, I'm talking about the audio quality, the quality of the production.
Couple of things, as usual with most of them. A lot of people don't get miking, or they don't have the right mic. I think the hostess is muddy. I think she's using a cheap mic that doesn't sound good. And there's one guy that's too loud, and another guy that's real crystal clear. It's uneven.
Yeah, a lot of these new guys use the USB deals. You know, that blue whatever it's called. These are the USB mics that look like good mics. Yeah, they look like they're good mics, but they get good write ups, but they're really crap.
Well, yeah.
I've had this mic since you told me to get it way back when.
The PR40?
Yeah, the PR40.
Yeah, it sounds good with you.
Yeah, this one works well. I've had some condensers, you know, the side talkers.
Yeah.
But they really, if you're not careful, they kind of go crazy on you.
Well, you have to really be careful.
Yep. The Conference Board came out with consumer confidence today, which was really interesting. Today is an important day. This is the turnaround day that I always see. Either we get a turn from a trend that was higher to lower. It's the end of the month is why. It's nothing more than that. The last Tuesday of the month, we see consumer confidence. We see the Case-Shiller Home Index and a few other things. Durable goods as well. I believe, is that today or yesterday? But anyway, the two of them are the consumer confidence, the main ones, and the Case-Shiller. Case-Shiller was actually interesting. This is a 20-city composite, gained 6.3% on a year-over-year basis. That's substantial.
I think that's huge.
That's substantial. You know, 6.5% on your house. And, yeah, you know,
which is leverage to begin with.
Yeah, leverage. And it's after a 9-year recovery.
Yeah.
You know?
Real estate. Real estate is a little hot.
Yeah.
A little hot. You said it was going to back off, but I don't know. I think it will in some areas. But I was looking around at the prices around the country. And generally speaking, it's hot.
It's very hot. We'll talk about that. I think I have some stats here on the recent new home sales index, which actually, it's coming up in a second, actually. We'll get to that in a moment. But I want to talk about this consumer confidence index because don't forget, we are here finding this out. This is February, but this is right after that big run into the end of the year. And of course, that big run into January. And now the consumer confidence index is at a blistering level of 130.8, which is up from 124 in January. I mean, that's pretty hot.
Yes, I would say so, especially I think in December or whenever it was, there was a recent downturn in it that we couldn't explain.
Right.
I think it was just an anomaly. For some reason, people think everything's hunky-dory.
Yeah, I mean, the present situation increased to 154, from 154 to 162. Expectations increased from 104 to 109. These are the highest levels since the year 2000. And I have a chart for this. Mm. This is not the easiest chart to get, by the way, because these guys, they're greedy bastards. The Conference Board now charges for this data, and you can't even find it anywhere unless you're paying for it. You know?
I don't know why.
But anyway, I found one. Bloomberg.
Once they release the data, I mean, I don't know.
Even lag it a little bit. You know, lag it a month. But I guess because they can get paid for it, they do. So take a look at this chart. Shows the consumer confidence rising steadily since 2009. A couple of blips here back in 2011. You know, a little kind of a jagged way up through 2013. Then a straight line into 2014, end of 2014. A rollover flattening out in 2016. Then boom, straight up. So at the highest level since 2000. Now, every time you mention something like that, it's like, if I said, it's the highest level since 87 or the highest level since 2000, the highest level since 2007, everybody starts getting, whoa, man, that's bad. That doesn't mean anything. Just means it's the highest level since 2000 when people were excited. They had money.
Oh, people were very excited. In fact, you look at this, I'm looking at the chart now, 98, 99, 2000, everyone was all jacked up.
Yeah, their portfolios were doing well. They thought that this would go on forever. Wages were good. You know, everything was fine.
Yeah, the bubble, the dot-com bubble.
Yeah, consumer confidence is a very highly, it's seen as a very important mark for the implications of how markets will react. Because you look at, you know, the read-through would be that if consumers are happy and things are going well, they're going to go out and spend more, and that's good for the...
Yeah, I would just say it's going to heat up.
Yeah, that's
not good.
Right.
Bad.
Exactly. So when you get overdone, and consumers are usually wrong. Look, we get the highest levels on certain things, and oftentimes it's just at the wrong time. And they right now they're you know, they got really negative on stocks. You know, look at the bullish bearish stuff. They got really negative on stocks right at the bottom. Well, that's not here, but it's a different chart.
Well, I'll say this, if the thing goes up another what, 10 or 20 points.
Yeah.
It's going to be a collapse.
Yep. Cuz it's almost manic. You know, everybody gets into that manic stage of, oh, everything is so great and everything around me seems so crystal clear and bright and sunny and pastel colors. And
I like the way this thing collapsed in 2000, kind of tried to get back in 2002. And then it collapsed. Of course, 9/11 happened too, which drove it to down quite a bit. But it didn't, even 9/11 and the dot-com crash didn't hold a candle to 2007, 2008.
Yep.
That's where the thing really went in the toilet.
Well, that's because we had all those job losses. That's something that really bothers people.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. From looking at this chart. This chart's very educational.
Okay, good. There you go. We aim to educate. That's what we do. And actually, if you want, anybody listening right now, you can apply for your continuing education credits for whatever particular career that you have, and we'll make sure to post you an hour's worth of CE credits. If you can find the form for that somewhere, which is non-existent, but nonetheless. Also, back to your discussion about home prices and back to the 6.3% year-over-year on the Case-Shiller. So sales of U.S. single-family homes, new ones, new homes, not existing, new homes, fell actually for a second straight month in January.
Mm.
And there was big declines in the Northeast and South. Now, I would believe that there is something to be said about the Northeast. First of all, the prices are very high, have been for a while. And then you have this whole issue with regards to the new tax deal that doesn't allow for the deduction of the SALT, state and local taxes.
Right.
And I would think that someone who's probably paying the Northeast, $20,000 worth of taxes that no longer is deductible, that's a couple of bucks that they're losing out on.
Yes, I think so.
So you would think that property values there are a concern, and maybe people aren't necessarily looking to move there. And anybody that's moving out of there, so I'm not sure what the South is all about. Why the South is having that, because in Florida there's no, I guess some states do have that, but you would think it would be in California, right? You'd think in the Northeast, definitely.
Oh, California's going to take it in the shorts.
Yeah, this is a big problem. Obviously, they didn't think this through very well.
Well, I think they did think it through. They wanted the Northeast and California to take it in the shorts because none of them voted for the Republicans.
So you think this was a purpose? They figured this out somehow, that there was a correlation to high taxes that were paid on property taxes and getting them back. They somehow figured out this would be great. Blue state gets whacked. Couple of red states in there, maybe, but generally speaking, the blue states will get waxed. So let's just find this weird way of doing it through removing the state and local tax deductions. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm telling you.
If that was the plan.
I don't know if it was the plan. I think it was a secondary feature. It was a feature.
Brilliant then, let me just say. I'm not saying I like it, but it was a brilliant job.
Yeah.
I mean, that took some thinking about that, how to put that all together and figure it out.
Didn't take much thinking. It was probably one or two. One guy thought of, hey, you know what? If we do this, that'll screw these guys. And then he put it forth. He says, these guys aren't my friends. Let's just run this through. Nobody's going to bitch because the whole thing's going to most people are going to make out except those guys.
Actually, let's take this one step further. Not only does it hurt them, as you say, they take it in the shorts, right? But possibly no additional people move there and people move out of there. And where do they move? They move to the other states, which they would then vote on and probably be succumb to voting with the other party.
or just it would water them down. So there wouldn't be so, you know, wouldn't be such a block of voters. And California just votes Democrat, period. It's like 80%. It's unbelievable how even when you look at the numbers.
Yeah. The Commerce Department said on Monday that new home sales dropped 7.8% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 593,000 units last month, which is the lowest since August of 2017, which is not like that's a big deal. It's only a few months back. But that should be concerning. It has to probably also to do with rates, how rates have been rising. Which leads us right into the next discussion that was really important. And that is that Jerome Powell, the new Fed... let me take a step back. So Jerome Powell is the new... They call him Jay Powell. He's the new Fed chair. And his first testimony, and really his first public appearance in a major way in this capacity, happened pretty much today in front of Congress. And markets were generally seeing him as just a clone of Yellen, and you know, and then of course that just you know from Bernanke, and he'll be easy and all that, and he's gonna you know keep everything status quo. Everybody's happy about that,
now, right?
Right? You know, that's what it is. So he, let me tell you what I learned though, as I was listening to him today. First of all, it was very clear that markets want to believe that inflation will be contained. And that he's going to have this real, this incredibly slow rate of change in terms of any of the policies. But he discussed the benefit of fiscal policy being a tailwind to the economy. So the taxes and the lower regulations and the all the spending they're doing on a fiscal basis. And the difference between, for those of you that don't know, monetary and fiscal policy. Monetary policy is what happens with the Fed when they do things like lower or raise rates. And fiscal policy is what is done through like government stimulus. So he discussed the benefit of fiscal policy as a tailwind and being stimulative. He talked about wage growth that's going to help economic growth. But somehow, magically, at that same moment, he was talking about, but that's not really going to really do anything about inflation. It's kind of like saying, I'm going to take that can of Coke and I'm going to drink it, but somehow magically it's going to be full by the time I put it down. It just doesn't work that way. You know, he's talking out of two sides of his Fed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think to almost everybody it's slightly confusing.
Yep. It is confusing. And that's part of the plan, by the way. That's part of what they try to do. I mean, the king of that, and probably my favorite of all time was Greenspan.
Yes.
I mean,
he would say with the weirdest stuff.
He's like a pocket thesaurus. His word usage and the way that he structured his sentences and the ability for him to confound. What was the most fascinating, I thought, because I always listened to him and tried to understand. It took me, I had to almost listen to him in slow motion. And I tried to understand what he said, but what was fascinating about Greenspan, as soon as he left the Fed and he went on to other things like doing speeches and stuff, clear as a bell. I mean, it was like, who is this guy? Who is this guy? I don't know. It's not the same guy. Amazing.
So you think he was doing the mumbling on purpose?
Yeah, not only the mumbling, but the word usage and the construction of his sentences to... You know, these long sentences with very sophisticated words that could be seen in many different ways. And you had to see what kind of, what word was put in front of another word and how it was used as a precursor to the next commentary. And very weird. Huh. Yeah. So then he talked about that. Then he kept talking about how things were really good. And I'm watching this. I'm like, boy, he's pretty happy with what's going on with the economy. I'm thinking to myself, that's not a good thing for him to say. You know, he's got to be, hey, the economy is good, but there's risks. We see that unemployment is really doing well. However, you know, that's how the Fed operates, right? So you say, you know, you give it a little bit, you take a little bit. So nobody gets all, you know, nobody gets kind of too excited, and you make sure that the Fed is still on your side. So he made a comment that when I saw that, my kind of eyes did one of those from a cartoon, like kind of opened up wide and rolled around in my head. You know, can you imagine that?
Right, with a boing sound.
Yeah, exactly. He said, inflation shortfall is transitory. And I'm like, uh-oh, that's not good. I don't know why he said that. And then it's on the TV. It's on the bottom. Inflation shortfall is transitory. Right? I'm thinking, yeah. Oh, no. Don't say that. That's not going to be good. What that means is that he believes that we're going to see inflation. And as he's talking about on the economy and the outlook, and I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good. This is not going to, you know, everybody's going to catch wind of this soon, very soon. So what happens? The market all of a sudden starts, you know, kind of the market then does the eyeball boing and says, oh, no. So it kind of looked like he was talking about potentially 4 rate hikes in the next year is a possibility, because he talked about how we'll keep increasing rates until inflation is contained. Well, markets rolled over on that. Dow ended up down 299.64 points today. The S&P and the NASDAQ followed along as well. It was pretty ugly. Bonds, the 2-year bond hit 2.92% today. And, you know, you have to wonder, where are we now? Are we in this kind of, you know, where we saw that there was a correction that was rejected and things moved right back up, or at least significantly higher. And now all of a sudden we have the same thing going on that caused the correction. So is this a correction, rejection, inflection point? Is that the question?
I would think yes.
Okay. See, that's the point. Now, if you look at the next chart, and somebody in the chat room
said, I like the term.
Correction, rejection, inflection?
Yeah.
Thank you. That we're going to trademark that, you and I.
Well, you should.
Have you ever done the trademark process?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Oh, boy, that's some process.
Yeah, well, patents are worse.
Yeah. So, by the way, somebody in the chat room asked if we could see the charts apart from Google. So I have no idea what that means. The charts will be available once the show is published on DH Unplugged. This particular episode, show notes, 397. But this is the problem. If you see this chart, we've been looking at this chart for a while now. And if you remember the chart that has the US dollar there.
Yeah.
If you look at this chart and you see that bottom in February, and right there where we saw that rise when markets started getting squirrely. And now what's happened is we saw the market, the dollar come up. All of a sudden stopped, leveled off at about 90.35, rolled down, markets came right back up. Now, the second time around, markets aren't as worried about this. Dollar starts coming up a little bit. They're like, okay, you know what? People are buying stocks, and now it's a little bit behind us. We're not that worried because it didn't scream higher. It did roll over. There's some resistance there. Now, today, we're hitting about 90.34, which is right where the troubles really hit, you know, as the rise happened. If we see 91, all bets are off.
What are we, what's the blue and red line? What is all this on here?
The blue and red line is the 50-day moving average.
Okay.
And the 200-day moving average. And the cross lines, the red cross line, horizontal line, is just a resistance point that I see as a real problem. Because if you notice, above that level, a little bit to the left of the spike that I put it at, you see there's nothing there. There's no resistance up to about 92 and a half.
So, you think this is bad? Why?
Because one of the big tailwinds we've had for a while now, particularly for multinationals and from our big companies like the Apples and the Googles and the Microsofts, the Facebooks and all that, has been the dollar decline about 10%. And that has helped Caterpillar. It's helped sales. It's helped their net earnings and their revenues and all that. If you see this turnaround,
you're saying that the foreign exchange is a big contributor to the profits of these international companies.
That's correct.
And you don't want to see a strong dollar.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a weak dollar. No, you want to see a weak dollar.
You want to see a weak dollar. And this is starting to strengthen. And then on top of that, if you see that the bond yields continue higher, right now we're pretty much peaked out about 2.92% on the 10-year. If it hits 3, already... Goldman is predicting that if we see 4.25, we're going to have about a 25% bloodbath.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, Goldman says that the market's going to have a 25% correct. That's a good number.
Yeah, 25%. How they get these numbers, I don't know. But it's because that's another component. Yields being higher are problematic for stocks because what will happen is that companies will no longer be able to borrow as cheaply. They'll have to pay more on their debt. They won't be able to borrow money to do buybacks into the future as cheaply. So it doesn't make any sense. They'll cut down the buybacks. And we know that about 40% of all the earnings growth that we've seen over the last, you know, 5 years has been because of buybacks. It's no secret. Just nobody wants to really pay attention to it. They'd rather think it was organic, which it ain't. So
this does not bode well.
No. So over the last few weeks, you know, as I usually read the various news articles and watch some business news out there and listen to radio and read magazines and also read publications from various sources, I started to realize, once again, this isn't a new revelation, but once again, it's the same thing over and over. And it really hit me when Warren Buffett he put out his annual letter over the weekend, and then usually CNBC has him on for like 4 hours or something in the morning on the following Monday morning.
Yeah, and it's useless, waste of time.
Useless, terrible, okay? But just that point is what hit me. And I started to think, this whole thing that goes on with these various market prognosticators and these various people that we're supposed to be listening to, right? It's almost like there's a whole list of categories. You can categorize them into what they're going to say. And if you understand what these categories are and how they say it, you can kind of pretty much just think of it as white noise in the background and not think that it's a new commentary that's giving you any incremental information to help you along with any of your investments. Not that they're going to hurt you either, but it's the same thing. So if you get these down, you know where it is. So what I did is I tried to channel, kind of Shirley MacLaine style, market predictions from a variety of sources. And I wrote these down. So if you ask these people, well, what do you believe is the future of the markets? Here are their answers. You want to go through these?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Warren Buffett. Unfortunately, I'm not good at voices, so I'm not going to, But imagine me saying this in the Warren Buffett voice.
Oh, he laughs a lot.
Yeah. He would say, on the future of markets, I don't know precisely, but markets over the long haul, maybe like 100 years, will move up and down.
What?
He said, I don't know precisely, he would say.
He said that?
No, he would say this. I'm giving you what these...
Okay, I'm sorry.
This is kind of like if I was asked the question.
You're boiling it down. You're boiling down the general. Okay.
Right. I don't know precisely, but markets over the long haul, maybe, you know, in the next 100 years or so, will move up and down. Elon Musk, what would he say? Markets will move up towards Mars. I would not bet against it, even if it doesn't. I predict it will be up 20% this year, even if it's only up 1%. Now, if you don't understand that whole thing, it's all about like his predictions of how many cars he'll produce, but he really doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good one.
Any CNBC guess that you hear, any of them, on the future of markets, what you hear is markets will be up with higher volatility. There may be a market correction sometime, but no idea when. If the market goes down, you should buy. If the market's up, by the way, you should buy. If the market's overpriced, buy. If it's underpriced, buy. If rich interest rates up, you should buy. And if interest rates are down, you should buy.
That would be a CNBC guy, that's for sure.
Right? Any Fed speaker, right? Markets will move directionally with a bias that is determined by participants in a measured pace. Overall movement will be transitory that will seem balanced. Our outward projections offer a moderate return to normal levels that are consistent with longer-term flows. Sounds like a Fed speaker would say that, right?
Yeah, sounds exactly like it.
All right, how about Big Daddy Donald Trump? During my presidency, markets will be beautiful and the best of all time.
Great.
Of all time, the best markets. Big returns, yeah. The biggest ever recorded under any president. If markets move down, it will be because of Obama and Hillary and poor decisions of others. Investigate Hillary if any selling is seen. And we have a recent add on after the comments he made about the shootings in Florida. If markets are down, I would be the first to run in and buy, not like those other cowards. by the way, just as a note for if you want some other, man on the street stuff, I told you that place is about 15 miles from me. That's cool.
Yeah, you told me this last show.
Yeah. Obama. What would former President Obama say about what would be the future of the markets? He would say, equity outlook. Yes, equality of equity is what is needed. Everyone should hold stock in that. Markets have good prices. In fact, I like the prices at markets like Whole Foods and things like that. They're the best. Remember, he knew nothing about the markets.
Yeah, he knew nothing. That sounds about right.
Steve Mnuchin. A strong equity market is in the best interest of the U.S. Wait, is that what I'm supposed to say? Bill Gates? If the market moves higher, investors should give away all their money. It's what I do. the last one is a famous Bitcoin investor. HODL. Valuations don't matter, just buy the dips. I have no idea what I'm buying, but it's exciting. TTM, to the moon.
That wasn't bad.
Uh-oh, are you going to grade this too?
I wasn't going to, but I could. But I see you keep working on material. It's like you're going to do some stand-up or something in the next couple of years.
I'm working on all that. I mean, we got to entertain, don't we? It's not just a...
Yeah. Well,
one of us does.
Hey-o.
I got a B- from the gang in the chat room.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some other news items here. Apple is preparing to release a trio of three smartphones later this year.
Yeah.
Three new ones.
They just released a bunch of phones, but yeah. Okay.
So it's going to be the largest iPhone ever. An upgraded handset.
Yeah, it's going to be a big 6-inch thing.
But it's going to be the same size as the iPhone X, but somehow, I don't even know how this is going to be. They're going to expand the screen even further. I don't know if they're going to wrap it around the back or something and include that in the dimensions.
Oh, me.
It's going to be, they're also going to have a less expensive model with some of the
flags. So they're going to try the cheap thing again like they did with the plastic ones.
Right. The big screen will be the same size as the iPhone X, but will be more edge-to-edge. I don't know how you make more edge-to-edge.
I don't know. It's right at the edge already.
Yeah. So I think the moral to this story here is hashtag out of ideas. Right?
Yeah. I mean, exact hashtag out of ideas. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yep. And not to be outdone, Samsung Electronics this weekend announced they're going to unveil its flagship. There's a big thing, the flagship word.
Everything's a flagship.
Yeah, flagship. A Galaxy S9 smartphone last weekend, with an emphasis on visual applications for social media. I don't know what that means. Visual applications.
That means they're going to have more of those goofy emoticons.
Isn't that kind of like...
Or your face will be one of them, I guess. Something like that.
Oh, dumb. So it's not going to be like the Microsoft phone with the tiles, that kind of thing.
No, I think it's going to be mostly like the Apple thing, which I've only seen one person use once ever, where you can be a zebra and be talking, you know, and then it sends out the message as the talking zebra.
Yeah, I've seen it. Not so funny. I mean, Snapchat does that stuff.
Yeah, but it gets old fast.
Yeah. They're hoping to attract tech-savvy young consumers because they have visual applications. I don't know, whatever that means again, exactly. To weather a market slowdown.
Ah, there's a market slowdown. They admitted to it. Yeah. That's good.
Now, in a follow-up report on Apple.
That's because how many of these phones do you have to buy in a lifetime? Do you really have to buy one every year? $1,000 a year in 10 years is 10 grand.
I don't, you know, this is the story of Dell. You know, when Dell was putting desktops on everybody's, well, the problem is that these are publicly traded companies that have to maintain growth continually.
Yes.
This is why they change the particular connectors every time they put out a new goddamn computer. It has nothing to do with potentially a better connector. It's just that they want you to buy a new one. I mean, that's why there's no universal connector for every computer. I have a box in my closet of chargers that I have to go through every time. All right, which one's the GoPro? You know, it doesn't fit in there exactly, right? Which one's for this camera? What's for this device? Which one's for the...
The other problem with that, and I've solved it a little bit, which is they're all black. So I use my silver Sharpie pen, and I write on the side of them in big letters what the device is for and what the voltage is.
Oh, that's smart.
So at least you can see it.
Right.
Without having to get a magnifying glass out and read the one-point type that tells you the voltage.
Yeah.
And they also never tell you very few of the companies put the brand name of the product on the little charger. The charger is just some universal charger they bought, generic. It's really annoying.
Very annoying. But there was a follow-up on something that's going on that I think is pretty fascinating, actually. And I don't know how far this goes and what it really means, but a recent report shows that Apple relies on Amazon's S3 and Google Cloud Platform storage product to store the iCloud data. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know. I thought they had their own servers.
No. Or they may have their own servers, but they're somehow using Amazon and Google as well.
It's hard not to use Amazon. Everybody does.
Yeah. So you don't have much of a choice.
It's cheap. I mean, you can get for the amount that you have to spend, Amazon is got good. As somebody pointed out, if their system goes down, it takes their website with it, and they lose like something like $1 million a second or some ridiculous amount of money. So if anything's going to stay up, it's going to be Amazon.
I mean, I use the Amazon. I use a few different things, but I use the Glacier.
Yeah.
And I store every night we do backups, and I have several gigs on there. So it's kind of, you know, not every day does a full backup, but every week or so it does a full backup and does incremental and differential backups throughout, I pay $40 a month for all that. And I'm always looking like, okay, when's it going to go higher? And that also includes
it should go lower. It'll go lower.
And that also includes a bunch of videos that I have that people stream off of there. And that's only $40 a month. It's cheap.
You can stream videos off of Glacier?
No, not off Glacier, but off of the S3.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure you can.
Because you can just run a website off of that.
Yeah, you could.
Yep. And adding on to just a brand new announcement, which I thought this was cool because I've told you how much I love this. Amazon today has agreed to buy connected doorbell startup company Ring for about $1 billion. I look to see when I got that Ring doorbell, I have one of those over my boat now in the backyard. That is a floodlight cam that, you know, records everything that goes on out there.
Uh-huh.
I said, man, I wonder if this company is public because I really like the whole way their system works, their customer service. Just the whole process of using this thing was really nice. So I looked it up and found out not only were they not public, but I think they were booted off an earlier Shark Tank as who the hell wants to have a video phone, a video doorbell? Just get up and answer the damn doorbell. And now they're selling it for about $1 billion, which actually makes a lot of sense for Amazon. Don't you think?
Why?
Well, it's just one more part of the connected house because you could have a lot of other devices on the whole network.
Yep.
And maybe it's something like, how about this? Amazon delivers to your house. The guy puts up a, you're not home, and you have a little box at the side of your house in the front of your house with a lock. The guy scans the package in your doorbell and it unlocks the lockbox for either a pickup or a drop-off. I just made this up. I think it's pretty possible.
It's very possible.
You know? So you get your drugs delivered that way in a safe
manner?
Write
up a patent immediately.
Yeah, okay. And then I got to go through the whole patent process, which you told me is more of a nightmare. So I'm not doing it.
It is. Yeah. But it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, now that I mentioned it and now that this is recorded, doesn't that give me part of the origination, right?
Yeah.
I could do that or write it in
there's actually some sort of a short form patent you can get once you get origination claims that lasts for a couple of years.
Well, if
I'm not sure. We must have a few patent guys out there that can tell us this stuff, what to do.
Yeah. And the good news is I'll write this down. If ever happens, the only thing I'll do is I'll sue and then they'll just pay me off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the easiest way to
do it. It's usually one of these little things. It's worth about $40,000 a suit.
Yeah. There you go. All right, let's kind of move through here. Talk about that. Bots. I don't want to talk about bots because I'm sick of the bots. General Electric Remember how we've talked about how this there's got to be more. The stock is not just dropping off a cliff with no news. It's got to be something else going on that we don't know about, right? Well, we've been seeing.
I would say yes. I think so. Something's up.
We've been seeing drips and drabs of things flow out here and there, you know. But it seemed like still, and I said it seemed like a Valiant or you know something that went on back, you know, with Enron. It just seemed. I'm not suggesting it's that bad, but something was not right the way the stock has been acting. Well, they came out last week with the announcement that they're going to be restating earnings from 2016 and 2017.
Ah, that's first never good.
Yep, they're doing that. They also are facing potential legal action by the Justice Department over GE Capital Units, now defunct WMC Mortgage Corp, which I think that was, what bank was that? That was, yeah, that bank, it's WM Bank. They went belly up. Yeah. Anyway, where they violated laws in connection with subprime mortgages. And yesterday, the stock cracked the $14 level. Bounced back up, I guess after a flush down, it was like $15 today. Or maybe I think it finished at about $14.60 or something like that. It was over $15. So definitely more information is playing out.
Sounds like it might be an interesting short.
Yeah, I'm not getting near it. It's just, it could, at $12.50, I'm interested in looking at maybe buying it. But I'll wait. That's another, what, another 10%? 8%?
Yeah.
Over to Japan for a second here. Governor Haruko Kuroda, I call him Kuroda, says he has no plans to take a fresh, I think this is fascinating, no plans to take a look at why the central bank has failed to meet its inflation targets. He's suggesting that no changes will be made to this massive stimulus program, even though they haven't gotten near their 2% target, which is a major hurdle for them, the 2% inflation target, which again, that arbitrary number. So what's the moral of the story? If it's broke, don't fix it.
I guess that's one moral.
I guess. I mean, and the whole thing in Japan is that it's the biggest. The problem is they can't do anything but just suppress their currency and keep rates down. It's just not working. But more so in Asia, this is the fascinating story. It could be not of the week. It could be of a while. I don't know if you followed this yet. But China's Central Committee proposed on Sunday to remove the limit of two consecutive terms for the president and vice president. Now, let me just tell you what that means entirely. That means president for life.
Yeah, that's what it means. That's what always, when anyone ever does that and removes the term limits, that's what it ends up meaning.
See, now the Chinese are a little bit, let's just say, excitable.
Well, I find that was a very, when I've heard about this, I just thought it was very odd.
Oh, really? It's ridiculous. It's just, this just shows you, and if it passes, by the way, it will show you that they do not have a democratic process.
Well, did you ever think they really did?
No, I did not. So what's interesting, what happened here, this is how the weird stuff starts here. So because the president and the potential emperor, right? That's what he'd be, right? An emperor? I mean, if he's in there for life, they bought all these stocks.
He wants to call himself.
They bought all these stocks on Monday that had the word emperor in it.
What?
Like Emperor Oil or Emperor Dry Cleaning, whatever was publicly traded with the word emperor in it. They bought them up, bought all these stocks
wow.
up.
Wow.
Like crazy.
That is nuts.
I'm telling you, they get out of control. I guess they thought that maybe the government, if that happened, he'd buy back and take control, if they didn't own it already, all these stocks that were in the name of, I just get it's funny. They're just so funny. You know, they have a lot of superstitions, like numbers and colors.
That's why they gamble so much. They love to gamble.
Love gambling. My dad said, when you go to the casino, when I was young, hey, when you go to a casino, you got to sit next to a Chinaman. That's what he says to me. I'm like, why? What do you mean? What are you talking about? Oh, they're lucky. They're lucky. I'm like, okay. let's see. Shares of Snapchat sank 6% last Thursday, which wiped out $1.3 billion in market value. Did we talk? We didn't talk about this.
Yeah.
Right? And it was blamed on a tweet from Kylie Jenner, which, by the way, I have not followed her at all, even really know anything about her. That whole cadre of Jenner and Kardashian. And
all it's too much of a hassle to deal with it.
You know this Kylie Jenner, though, that transformation she's had in terms of her face? Have you seen this?
No.
Oh, you need to see this. She's like 20 years old, and what she looked like, let's say, I don't know, a year ago, 2 years ago, to what she looks like now. First of all, the most brilliant, whoever her plastic surgeon is gets major, major kudos. An unbelievable transformation. We're not talking Michael Jackson disfigurement kind of thing. We're talking about an unbelievable change that is mind-boggling beautiful.
Hmm.
So she has like 45 million followers on Twitter. And she said, in a tweet, "So does anyone else not open Snapchat anymore, or is it just me? Ugh, this is so sad. Snapchat drops 6% or $1.3 billion of market value."
Yeah, I knew about this tweet, and I saw what happened, and I just thought it was so stupid.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with the market if that kind of thing moves $6 billion worth of valuation just over in minutes.
1.3, but yes.
Oh, okay. 1.3.
Let's see. We're trying to go faster here because we have a lot to talk about. Real quick, before we get to Fed limericks, confusing signals. Ray Dalio, the biggest hedge fund, Bridgewater, the biggest hedge fund out there, who recently said when he was in Davos that people will feel pretty stupid holding cash right before.
Yeah, we mentioned this before.
That was right before the market corrected in January, February. Is now saying we're in a pre-bubble stage and chances of a recession by 2020 are 70%. So what is I think I know what a bubble is. What's a pre-bubble?
It's like pre-crime.
It's like the precognition on...
I don't know what it is. It doesn't mean anything.
Pre-bubble.
You're either in a bubble or you're not.
I'm assuming if there is a pre-bubble, there's got to be a pre-pre-bubble.
Well, there should be a pre-pre-pre-bubble then.
Right. And then you have post-bubble, of course, and super post-bubble. These things are ridiculous. It's just the problem is that he recently also starred on Twitter. And once people this is the problem. You know what I'm saying? Anybody could say this is like this is what happened with the early days of blogging. Same thing with podcasting now. Anybody who they feel like they're geniuses because they could write something and send it out to 50 people or 1,000 people or whatever it is. Yeah.
Can I say?
Yep. All right. We got some Fed limericks. You ready for it?
Okay. Yep. Yeah.
Let
me go to the Fed limerick page.
Yeah. And this is getting popular because we're getting a lot in. We even got one with a donation this week.
Oh, that's a plus.
And by the way, if you feel like donating and you like the stand-up routine that John said that I did recently, or I'm going to, if you'd like to fund my stand-up career, you can make a donation over on dhunplugged.com, and there's a little donate button there, and you really should feel empowered to do so if you learned anything, if you didn't learn anything, if you're playing a drinking game to us, whatever it is, please do me a favor, do him a favor. John needs the money. John needs the money bad. So, all right, here's some from Fed limericks. First one's from me to start up and to warm us up here. There was a new man in the Fed with little objection he led. To prop up the banks, he said with the ranks, ensuring the stocks move ahead.
Wow. Well, that's unlike your other ones.
Oh, that means it's either really bad or
really
good.
No, I think it's very good. I'll give you an A-.
A-. Are A-plus is a possibility, by the way?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure they're in the range.
I just had A plus would be something that would actually make me laugh.
Okay. And by the way, the chat room, you could grade along with him. So we got an A minus for Horowitz on that one. Yeah. I don't want to see very good. So I want to see a grade from you guys. A grade. A plus through F. All right. This one's from Jack Fabricante, who for some reason felt necessary to tell me he's from Long Island, which is where I'm from. So maybe that's what that was about. And he says...
I bet she's from the Fabricante family.
Oh, could be. The famous Fabricante family. The Dukes of Fabricante. There is a president named Trump. Women besides his wife, he would hump. All right, let me start again. There was a president named Trump. Women besides his wife, he would hump. He claims the market gains are his because he's such because he thinks he's such a whiz, but his tweets show that he's really a chump.
I liked it. I thought it had a good. I thought it had a good good attack. It was funny. The first two lines was actually laughable. You laughed, but then, you know, the chump thing at the end is I thought it was just gratuitous. And I'm giving him a B-.
B-, okay.
His structure was good, though, so I gave him, you know, at least a B.
Eric Hoover, his entry. I went to the bank for a loan to purchase a house of my own, but I was too late. The Fed raised its rate. I guess I'll keep renting my home.
Huh. That's actually pretty good. I'll give him an A.
Oh. Oh, go Eric Hoover. And just because your last name is Hoover, I'm saying that you're sucking up the good grades here as in a vacuum cleaner. All right. Wade D writes in. When Horowitz likes a stock and Dvorak says it's a crock, it's DH unplugged if your server is not bugged every Tuesday at 9 o'clock.
Well, it's as if he was like, this is like a beginner's limerick. It didn't have good rhyme. Old clock and crock and stock. It did rhyme technically, but it didn't work. So I'm giving him a C, a C.
A C. All these grades will be over on DH Unplugged on the show notes, so you can check those out. Just banging through this right now. Let's see here. The closest to the pin for Caterpillar is now active. And you, my friend, did not give me a price. And I am pulling the management position that you could not give me a price because it's closing Friday and that would be unfair.
Okay. I've been kicked from a couple of these. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Besides that, with the market going to where it's going, I'm not going to hit it under any circumstances.
Yep. Real quickly, before we get to the stocks, Comcast today made a tentative $30 billion offer for Sky, which topped the rival bid from 21st Century Fox, which is going to try to consolidate the ownership of the broadcaster, moving to get rid of the assets that were overseen by Disney and agreed to buy from Fox and all that. So they came in like 20% higher.
That's a weird one.
Mm-hmm. But it makes a lot of sense because it's a very similar company outside the U.S. And Comcast really has no property outside of the U.S. to speak of in terms of their television, cable/internet, you know, all that stuff, you know, everything that Comcast has. And that would be a pretty good fit for them to actually branch out into, you know, outside the U.S.
Well, Sky is more than just a delivery system. It's a whole network.
Right. And they also, they have shows and they also have news, right?
Lots of news. So they have to have a news op. So it's a news operation that actually delivers over satellite. We don't really have anything like that in this country.
Well, it should be interesting to see what happens. Now, I don't know if they're going to actually, you know, if 21st Century Fox is going to try to come in here. Comcast is down about 6%.
I think it should be down. I don't know. I personally don't see the way this would work out for them. Mm-hmm. It's just like there's not their core competency. Okay, well, they do own NBCI, and NBC is a programming operation, and they can produce content, and they know how to do it right. And they've got all these shows. They could drop them on that satellite over there, but I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't sit well with me.
We're going to hold some of the other things till next show, but before we do so, we're running a little bit over here. And a question from Steve Duran, which I don't have the answer for, so maybe you will. But what is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine?
I wrote a column debunking the idea that once something gets on the internet, it's there forever. I say just the opposite.
What about the Wayback Machines and all that stuff?
I also bitch about that. If you go to the Wayback Machine and look at some of this stuff, there'll be links in the, you know, you'll see some a partial page. A lot of it's gone. You click on something, it never connects to anything. the newspapers, they keep coming in with redesign and they keep changing. They use different databases. And so the old links don't work. I mean, the whole thing's a joke.
Hmm. So, but you're saying that on the internet, well, there's a couple of sides to this. One is that stuff on the internet, the theory that stuff on the internet's there forever, which is right. then publicly available in an easy way versus it's somewhere forever that maybe is not easily accessible.
No, I'll deny the forever part of the equation. You have to read the column. It's pretty funny.
Well, that's the point. PC Magazine, there's a link on this.
PCMag.com.
Yep, PCMag.com. Yep. How long have you been writing for them?
PC Mag? Yep. Since 1986.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Not even to say, it's like three different companies over the time. For some reason, they've kept me going.
Well, you know why? Because you're great. And of course, you could follow him on Twitter on The Real Dvorak and listen to him each and every week, twice a week.
I've been losing numbers.
What kind of numbers?
Well, my numbers have been going down because they've been whacking all these guys who are fakes and Russians.
Oh, on Twitter? Yeah, me too. I lost like 1,000 last week.
Yeah, I lost a number of thousands.
But maybe that's fine. Maybe those are people that are no good anyway or that weren't real.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. But you can follow John T. Dvorak at The Real Dvorak. Listen to him on No Agenda Thursdays at 12 in the afternoon live, or you can, of course, download it from your favorite podcast suppository. Or Sundays at 12 o'clock also with Adam Curry when they debunk, declassify, dearrange, and go through all the news. I'm sure that the whole Jared Kushner prediction that came through today is going to be
because it was so obvious who couldn't.
Right, because Adam is from the future.
Yeah.
He's from the future. Let's see here. All right, let's talk about some stocks here. There's a game that we play. It's not a buy or sell recommendation at all. It's not an offer to buy or sell anything. It's nothing more than a game. Do yourselves a favor. If you decide to use any of the things that we talk about, do your homework. We're not responsible for your losses. We'll take all the credit for your gains. But nonetheless, make sure that you are seeking professional financial advice. John T. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz Company clients may own any of the stocks that are recommended. And we will duly note that on disclosure. You can find all this information over on DH Unplugged. You just go over the weekly stock picks and you can click it. I'm like that hamburger guy that talks so fast.
Yeah, you're getting there.
Anyway, go ahead.
Now, the funny thing about this list is that I've noticed that over time, we've only maybe picked four or maybe five of the purple things where we both agree to do it. They've never lost money.
Yep, that's a correct statement. That is a correct statement.
Just mentioning it.
Yep.
Okay, I have one thing maybe I'm thinking about because it's like every other person in the company seems to have bought equal shares, but that makes me think it's some sort of something else is going on. But I'm going to put it on my list anyway. It's a cheapie, mm-hmm. $7 stock called Extant Medical Holdings. I think something's up and I'm guessing it'll be a merger. XTNT.
Yeah, somehow, I don't know why I knew that symbol. That is bizarre. Extant Medical Holdings.
Yeah.
It's currently trading. So what is the, let me click this button here. What is the, is there 15%?
No, I'm going to, no. I think it's just either going to, if it goes down 15%, I don't care. No, 15%. I don't need it.
I'm picking a really bizarre situation here. This is a stock that is in the I never could say this correctly. I don't think. Let me say first, it's the eye business. You know, the
ophthalmology.
Yeah, ophthalmology and ophthalmological pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
I don't know if I really just butchered that, but
probably.
Essentially, they really have a lot of the eye medicine. A lot of other things too, but they were being bought by another company. Stock was up and sitting kind of, if you look at a chart, just sat there, you know, after the buy price was, and until they went through the due diligence and all, just sat there. And all of a sudden yesterday, there's some hoo-ha that the acquiring firm is concerned about some of the things that happened with the company with regard to their processes and maybe some of the issues related to one of their or several of their medicines and some corners that were cut, and this could be a problem and all this, okay? Stock drops 38% today.
Wow.
So this has been a company that actually for a long time was, you know, before the whole buyout deal, was doing really well. You know, it was definitely on a good path, and I've seen this before and I've watched this stock before, and then they got bought out. So it's kind of like, put them aside, all done, who cares, right? So I was thinking that a couple things can happen from this. First, the deal goes south, right? This goes sour and it goes bad. And the second thing could be that there really is something more about this. They were really a bad actor here somehow. And it wasn't uncovered till the buying and acquiring firm found it all out. And maybe they're going to be sanctioned and have problems.
Yeah, due diligence.
Right. The third thing is that maybe the acquiring firm will just bust it. Nothing will be found. And the stock will find its legs to get back at least to where the price was before the buyout was happening. I just thought this may be a little bit overdone. Or finally,
this is one of your you have the intuition of a guy who does this for a living.
Yeah, so maybe the acquisition is in question, but maybe the acquiring firm will say, you know what, we'll take the risk. We're going to give you 25% less than we told you we're going to give you, and this stock goes back up. So it could definitely. So
what's your target? What's your price? What's the target look like?
Well, it's like 1865. So I'm looking at back to at least 25s.
Oh, okay.
That's
reasonable.
This could. See some more. I mean, my preference would be, I have an actual alert for me to buy this at about, I think it's right at 18. So what is that? That's 65 cents on 18.30. So it's only 5% lower. So I won't get stopped out if it does hit that. You know, if it does have another down day.
Okay.
So we'll hold that. Other than that, any other announcements, predictions, warm wishes, anything that you want to?
Is it your birthday?
Now, not until the next month, March 20th.
Oh, okay. Good. No, I'm good. I'm good to go.
All right. All right. Well, that we're going to end the show. I want to tell you that I look forward to us meeting next Tuesday, and I will bring to the table all my adventures from going to that weekend cruise down in Miami or throughout Miami. I go to Miami, I think Nassau, and then which I don't really want to get off the boat. And then I go to their creepy island that they own.
What boat company owns an island?
All of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they all own these private islands down the Bahamas where they dock up and they take you on boat across there and they have like parties on the island. Stuff. Yeah, small islands. Hmm. But enough for 1,000 people to be on the island partying.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, have a ball.
All right, thanks. I will see you next week.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.